We are live right now, Event Icons. It's time for another episode. I think you guys are going to really like this one. With the ever-shifting world of marketing and, you know, how do we work with our partners in the world, this episode is going to be especially for you. These guys launched a conference literally in like 90 days, went from 0 to 5,000 people in 90 days, and did it virtually as well. So if you're seeing declining virtual numbers and you're wondering how do you actually do a great virtual event, this is going to be an awesome one. We got some people from Endless, we got some people from Partner Hacker. This is going to be a good old party episode right now. So let's go ahead and drop that intro and get started with this week's episode of Event Icons.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share Hashtag Event Icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is Hashtag Event Icons.
Boom, here we go. I just can't wait. We have literally three awesome guests, and we're going to fill up this hour like super quick. So I got to get our guests up here really, really fast. First of all, one of my counterparts over at Endless Events, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on the show.
Nicole, you get to play a little bit of co-host mixed with also sharing experience because you actually worked this event. So we're going to see some behind the scenes. You were the event manager in charge of a lot of different elements a part of the event. So
That's right. So
feel free to help me ask questions as we go along. But I think we got to bring the men of the hour?
Let's bring the men of the hour in.
First, starting with the founder Partner Hacker, Jared Fuller. Jared, thank you so much for joining us. You master blaster, charge of everything partners.
To some degree, but I refer to myself on LinkedIn. My title is OG Partner Hacker, so it's always been a part of what I do is figuring out weird and interesting and new ways to drive some business value through partnerships. So
I love it, and we'll dive definitely deeper into that. But we got to bring your counterpart from Partner Hacker up, Mr. Isaac Morehouse, also joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having us here. That intro was amazing because now I get to tell people I'm an icon. Did you guys know I'm an icon? Jared, we're icons now.
You are icons of the events industry for sure. And I think as people start to hear your guys' story about how you created this event and what went into it, I think people are going to get really, really excited. And I think they're going to agree you guys are definitely icons for sure.
I told Jared, like when we first launched Partner Hacker, which was not even quite a year ago, I said, look, I don't want to be an events company. I don't want to do events. And he was like, maybe we'll see. And I was like, no, I've done enough events in my life. We're not doing events. 3 months later, we did our first event. And then I was like, okay, we have to do events.
Well, obviously the audience has a huge clamoring for it for sure. So I think that people are going to be excited for all your future events you guys have had. And you guys have done some follow-up stuff too. So we'll be excited to dive deeper into that. Before we jump into talking about the event itself, I want to give a quick chance for each of you to kind of answer the question of what got you in the events industry and kind of what got you to where you are today. Nicole, I think you probably have a quicker answer for this since you started at Endless. And, then we'll get into the Partner Hacker story, if that's okay. So, Nicole, kick us off. Like, what got you in the events industry and where you are today?
Oh, yeah. Well, so it's been kind of a journey that's evolved over about 12 years now. Started from the humble roots of bartending and setting up cool bar designs for all kinds of parties and events. And then I worked my way up through that into doing like full-on wedding planning for several years, which was a whole different kind of ball game. After that, kind of worked my way to a lot of trade shows, kind of like food-based festivals and trade shows, like huge. We're talking like 10,000 plus people events, which I ran a company for many years that handled that, which was really cool. Great experience and really big job. And then landed here at Endless Events as a senior events manager. And just, I love the kind of caliber of events that we do here at Endless, just kind of the next level in professionalism and like high end. So that's where I was always trying to land myself. So happy to share that journey with y'all. And it's been
Nicole, you gotta be totally honest. Who is harder to work with, a bride to be or whoever is working with her fly the family, or like a corporate events person?
Oh boy. I think we all probably know the answer to that. but just to spell it out, there is a special type of energy in a bride to be. So and their moms. So I'm just gonna put that out there. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I did it for a lot of years. So I just like to keep people calm when their tensions are very high. But I think the corporate marketing managers are a little bit easier for me to hold their hand than the brides.
I'll agree with that for sure.
Real talk there.
All right. Well, let's go on. Jared, I want you to tell a little story of how Partner Hacker got created and kind of where the idea for the event came from.
Gosh, I don't know if I want to start with why Partner Hacker was created as much as why I really, really hate go-to-market as a function of B2B companies. So this debate between sales and marketing and customer success, it's like sales blames marketing for not enough leads or bad leads, and then marketing blames sales for not closing them, and then they throw that mess over to the customer success team. They're like, what did you two do? What did you two do over there? That was horrible. Like, out of all those fights, you send us this garbage, right? So to me, I've always thought, and it's taken me a while to formulate this, that like, where great relationships and great business value happens is it happens whenever you're driving value and working with people that have been to the places that your customers want to go. And I can say that again, trust comes from helping people reach their promised land. What do I mean by that? It comes from a place where presumably if I'm in business, I'm trying to figure something out and I might be a CIO or a CRO or a CSO, whatever that title is. And I really need people that have done the thing that I'm trying to do. But everything that it's in business about marketing, sales, like generating leads, demand, has nothing to do with helping that person get to where they want to go. It's about some internal thing. So I was like, I've always loved this partnerships thing. I've always been doing it. I was a head of sales and partnerships at PandaDoc. Then I was head of partnerships at Drift. So both back-to-back unicorns where we did a decent job. I started a podcast called Partner Up. Not to share my knowledge, but because it's a hack. It was a hack. Why? I needed to learn. There's 230,000 books on Amazon on marketing and sales. You know how many there are on partnerships, on modern partnerships, B2B? Like a handful. And Isaac and I, we published the Partner Hacker Handbook, and now it's the number one book in partnership, so to speak. Number one bestseller on Amazon and, you know, kind of like our category. Why start partnerships is I just got sick of like people worrying more about their internal stuff than helping people get to the places that they want to go. And then Isaac and I have known each other for going on 10 plus years. He's the content god. I'm the partner hacker. And the podcast started to take off at the economic downturn. And all of a sudden, what was once, you know, the third rail or the third wheel that no one wanted to talk about, is like partnerships was never really part of the party, became first chair. And our podcast started taking off and we spun up a newsletter and kind of the rest is history. So we've gone from that to a, you know, multi-million dollar media business in not even a year.
That's amazing. I love it. And I think a lot of people who are trying to figure out like what their strategy is related to content and events and like how, what's that going to look like moving forward. I think you guys are going to share some really, really good tips with that. Well, you're Jared just called you the content god, Isaac. So what got you to where you are now the content god over at Partner Hacker?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I have, I don't know, like a 10, 15 year history of entrepreneurship. So I built a couple of companies, but not in the B2B space. And I certainly didn't know anything about partnerships at B2B SaaS companies, or very little anyway. But I built, you know, a bootstrap company, and then I did a venture back company, all in the kind of like early career stage, like working with young people, helping them get started in their careers. And both of those companies I built with essentially zero paid marketing of any kind. Occasionally we would do some paid marketing and it never ended up working out, never ended up being worth it. It was 100% from content, community, and events. And those things, I guess I would put another C before that, which would be category. Like having a category story, having a unique, radical, compelling point of view. So for my first company, it was don't go to college. don't go to college, skip college and do this boot camp and apprenticeship. And after 1 year at zero net cost, you're going to be working at a startup and you're going to be off on your way on your career in a non-technical role, sales, marketing, customer success, something like that. Right. So like you can create a community, a movement around, hey, you feel like you're wasting your time and money in college. You're right. Everyone else is wrong. You're right. Right. That's compelling. It's provocative. It starts fights. It gets people to bring you on their podcast. We built the entire marketing funnel, the entire company, bootstrapped this whole thing up to, 15, 20 employees doing profitable, growing like crazy. 100%. Hundreds of blog posts, right? Webinars, in-person events on everybody else's podcast, hosting our own podcast, publishing books, built that company on that, repeated that for a software platform that just never quite got the traction. Like, so I was creating the software platform for job seekers, and that was venture backed. Didn't get the traction on the product side, could never get above a certain, sort of low number of like diehard users that loved it, but just could not get scale. But what did work was the media side, our newsletter, a daily newsletter for job seekers, 200,000 subscribers in less than a year. Like the events and the content component, doing webinars for job seekers, like the content side. So, Jared and I had known each other, as he said, I reconnected with him and was like, hey man, I'm kind of looking for what I want to do next. I know I want to build some more companies, but I'm not quite sure yet if I've got the one. Maybe I'll do some like fractional CMO work. And he's like, no, you want to come help me build a media company? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, go listen to the Partner Up podcast. I've been doing this podcast for like a year. There's something more here. People are hungry for this. There's nobody talking about it. There's nobody covering this era. And this is the decade of ecosystem, right? Like this, it's going to be big and it's only going to get bigger. Trust me. And I'm like, I don't know anything about B2B SaaS, partnership stuff. He's like, doesn't matter. You can learn it, right? Like that's learning out loud is kind of part of my, it's exactly what I do. Like I'm not an expert, but I can just go be curious out loud. So he convinced me to try. Okay. I'm like, all right, well, I'll run it. Let's do we'll go in this together. I'll co-host the podcast with you. And then we'll do an email newsletter. So we'll spin up an email newsletter. And I just basically modeled it after things that I'd seen work before. It was like a daily email, right? The daily Partner Hacker Daily. And literally we spun that up in like February. In March, it was like, huh, there's really something here. In April, quit my job. We launched the website. We went full time. And it was like, there is really something here happening in this space. So that's kind of where, and the events component, as I said before, I was like, yeah, media content, but like, oh, I've done so many events in my life. For like 15 years, I've done events all over the place, in-person events, virtual events. Like, oh man, that sounds kind of tiring. I don't know, Jared. And I was kind of hemming and hawing, but we can get into the details on this if you want to, but like realizing that first event we did, realizing that the forcing function of a date of something to rally partners around, like our content fed into and built the narrative arc leading to the event as the culmination point. Without that, the content's just kind of like out there, right? So having that as like this forcing function, and then having the event is actually a bigger driver of subscribers to our content than the other way around. Right. I assume we get all the subscribers through our content and then we're able to get them to come to events. So like, well, why would we run an event until our list is 20,000 big? It's the other way around. We run an event and our list doubles because people who are signing up for the event are like, ooh, also sign me up for your newsletter. Like that was counterintuitive to me. I did not expect that. So now here we are, it's reversed. Events are like the core, like, okay, here are the events we're going to do in the year. And all of our content gears towards those, not the other way around.
Amazing. Man, so great when you hire people who have their own podcast, because you guys just like know what to talk about, and I can just solo you guys and be done, and I can only have to host the show. You guys, this is really cool. So you guys created PLX, partner led everything. The idea like partners is a part of the whole entire ecosystem. What do you think makes the event so unique compared to most events in kind of the similar space that you have seen? So, maybe each person can grab one thing that they like the most about PLX and kind of what ended up happening and that made the event really, really unique.
It's kind of like, whenever you think about a brand, it's really hard to describe, but it's the way that it makes you feel. So for me, PLX, it had to have a vibe. It had to have a vibe. So like one of the very first things is like, we're going to create a soundtrack. And I don't just mean a Spotify playlist. Like this is going to be synthwave. It's going to feel like the future is coming, right? It's going to feel like this is the moment that everyone's been waiting for. And I feel like the brand, like the design, the music, the feel,
the vibe, the energy.
Jared went and wrote a song. Literally, he wrote a song. He wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
And he went and talked to a bunch of people on Fiverr, like, give me some samples for beats. And we had an original song. We had a music only version. Then we had a version with lyrics. And we like created our own song to capture that vibe. Same with like the visual aesthetic design. Like we want a unique vibe to all of this. So yeah, like from the very minute we did it, it was like vibes first, you know? I want to hear Nicole's answer to this though, because she was all over this event.
Well, so, you know, when Jared started talking, I was like, all right, well, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, it is hard, I think, sometimes to make a virtual event really personalized and like this very on-brand experience. And, you know, you mentioned the music aspect. I had it just like bump in here in my office like for weeks when I was working on the event. But I mean, everything down to like just like your color scheme and the palette and just like all the graphics. I mean, you got the graphic design.
Every day
for,
having its own color, right?
Yeah, right. Every day having its own color, but it was all very like, you know, coherent throughout each week or throughout the week. But I mean, just the whole build out of the platform visually and then the feeling, like you said, the vibe, it was really present. And that was definitely something that immediately stood out to me about the event. Once I saw the first time I opened it and saw the platform, I was just like, wow, these guys had a vision and absolutely executed it. So, yeah, I mean, that I think. Go ahead.
You hopped in. It was a custom illustration, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like this own experience that we designed. You'd never entered into an event like that. And I think what I mean by brand, just to kind of cap my point, is that so many people think of an event as like, how do we make it on brand? F that. The event is the brand, right? I didn't make the Partner Hacker Summit about Partner Hacker and our brand. It was PLX. That is the brand. It needs to stand alone and have its own narrative arc and its own mission and purpose and vision around everything. So like that was my kind of point of view on what I meant by brand. And like because of that, we had to make it stand on its own.
Let me tack on to that. There is one other thing that I want to say that made this event really special that's separate from the kind of brand vibes thing. But just to reinforce, you know, it was if we want to create an experience where when you think about a baseball game you went to, like maybe it's a big or a big college rivalry football game or a concert. You immediately have a feeling about it. It gives you a feeling. You have feelings associated with all those sights and sounds and smells and memories. How often do you feel that about a corporate conference, right? And we're like, we want you to have that feeling. And so this was a multi-sensory experience, even though it's virtual. So having a dedicated MC that we brought in, and we made him like a star in all the promo leading up to the event, we dropped all these weird, mysterious videos with him, the guy who was going to be the MC, not us, not Partner Hacker, this MC guy talking and being like, I'm going to be your guide to the future. Join us. I'm going to lead you through. He's the leader, the guide throughout. And then when you show up at the event, the first thing you see, this custom illustration that has him sitting there like this wizard over his synthwave like arcade. And he's like, welcome, right? He's doing magic tricks. So it's like creating this like feeling. And then we created physical workbooks to go with. I think this is the first time anybody's done this. When you register, you get sent a physical workbook that has every session, a place to take notes, who the speaker is, scan a QR code to go to their LinkedIn, so that you have something physical in your hands on your desk that's branded the same color, PLX brand. To Jared's point, the PLX brand, it didn't say Partner Hacker. And I mean, it might have said somewhere small. I don't think it said Partner Hacker anywhere. It was covered with all of our sponsors. And that's the part I wanted to get to. So everybody talked about the vibe part. But here's what I like the most about the event. Everything was partner led. Everything we did together. Every session, all the promo, you go to the website, you see the PLX branding and you see our partners branding. You don't see Partner Hacker. All the videos that we made to promote it and tease it, we're dropping videos about our partners. This is why Partner Stack is amazing. And this is why you should come to PLX to hear more from Partner Stack. This is why, you know, this speaker is amazing. And we're so glad that Tackle is bringing them into this event. And we made everyone look cool. We sent them all pictures of themselves with like synthwave backgrounds and be like, hey, go share this on social. We want everyone who's participating in this thing to like be wrapped in this so that it's the brand of all of us who are here. This is not a Partner Hacker show. This is a everyone that we're bringing in to sponsor this thing. They truly were partners. We've had a debate over whether you could call them partners or sponsors. A sponsor pays to get their logo slapped on something and do lead share. A partner is with you co-creating the sessions, co-creating the event, co-marketing the event. And we did that through and through. Like, this was not something that our six-person team could have done alone.
Wow. So I want to talk about the co-creation element of things, because I think a lot of people want that, right? Like, they want their attendees to help create the content. They want, you know, their speakers to help create really unique content, all these things like that. And Nicole, I know you had a job of managing like a crap ton of speakers through this whole process. So what if someone's looking to kind of do this like co-created content aspect and what Isaac and Jared have created, which is partners leading everything, what are your tips for them when it comes to like getting those speakers wrangled so well?
Wow. Well, you know, it's not an easy task. Everyone is in a different time zone and everyone has a different schedule and people are so busy, you know, it's hard to make this suggestion. But I do think that getting together with, you know, whether you're co-hosting a session or you're co-hosting many sessions, so you want to, you know, have a big hand in that whole day or however much you're involved, just getting involved early and often, which is easier said than done with busy schedules. But I think that once we were able to connect partners who were hosting sessions along with the Partner Hacker team or just on their own, once we were able to get people together, you know, in documents or virtually meeting, that's where it really, you could see that the wheels were turning and people were kind of creating this content together and riffing off each other's ideas. And I think that, yeah, just getting together really as early as possible, which, you know, that there wasn't a whole lot of time on this event from like we were talking about inception to execution. So just the fact that people were so ready, you know, once they were called upon, was just really, really incredible for everyone.
I kind of have a question for everybody on this, because I don't know the degree to which I was the content czar to some degree, or maybe I should say schedule czar. Like basically it was like, how are we going to fill up 5 days full of content? It's 5 days. About stuff that has never been talked about before in a lot of ways. Like, there was never a conference or an event about partner success. There was never really a dedicated event for partner marketing. There was never a dedicated event for partner selling. There was never a dedicated event for partner product. Like, literally is 5 days of like kind of first of its kind content. So I was like, I need to control the schedule. And like, here's what I think would fit in each of these days, since it was just like all in my head. And I feel like once that was out there, then everyone came around. It was like, I kind of like picked and choose a few people, like this person would be amazing. They're an amazing influencer on this. Like, oh, it'd be great to have that person speak on this. And I kind of like threw it all out there. And then from there, it was like the collaboration was there. What my question is more is like,
imagine you give someone a slot and that's all you give them.
Hey, here's a slot. Here's a panel. That seems like way more terrifying, but it also, I'm not sure like what standard is it like, hey, here's our agenda. Here's everything really kind of locked in terms of like title and theme for a session or the day or whatever. And you get to participate in that panel or you get to talk around that versus like, hey, here's a slot. Is that common? Is it uncommon? I had no idea. I just knew like, I felt like I had to be the content, you know, czar, the schedule czar, so to speak. And I definitely created some bottlenecks and some problems. You know, Isaac got some gray hairs for that one. So I got some gray hairs from it too.
No, look, for everybody listening. Yeah, we're talking about, oh, it's so cool. Had a vibe. We got 5,000 people. What a great, this thing was an utter shit show behind the scenes. I mean, Nicole can attest. It was like, there is just nothing non-stressful. I would have dreams at night. We had an Airtable that we managed the whole schedule on, when it had like slots for every, you know, speaker, day, session, title, which was proved to be very handy. And then we were able to actually just export that into our printed guide. I would have dreams of the Airtable. Like, I'm not kidding, of like all the spots that were blank and be like, oh my gosh, it's the day of the event. And we still have like, it was a mess, but here's a couple things we learned. We did a couple things right. We did a lot of things wrong. One of the things that was done right was, to Jared's point, I think it was very, very important to have an idea of what we wanted each day to accomplish and to have a narrative arc from the sessions in that day. So it's not just like, cool, we got a bunch of slots to fill up. Let's go get some sponsors and some people and just fill up the slots with whatever. then your experience is not cohesive. There's not a narrative arc, right? And we didn't always hit it, but we attempted to, which again, it was a bottleneck because Jared was the one that had most of that in his head, exactly what he wanted it to be. But to the extent that we were able to do that, it was really powerful. And the sponsors and the partners we worked with appreciated that. So here's where it didn't go as well, was where we would say, okay, great. You have a session about how marketplaces can work for a product team. Let us know what you want to do with that session and who you want on it. When we did that, we would hear nothing back. And because it's like overwhelming to the person on the other side. They're like, okay, I'm paying you to be a part of this thing. And now you're putting all this work on me. But when we said, hey, look, here's our ideas. We just sent you a draft of what we think your session should be. And we sent you a list of 15 speakers that we think would be good. And we can get any of those because they're in our network. And then we think you should plug in two customers here and somebody from your team here. Let us know if you want us to tweak or adjust that. That was the way to start the co-creation. It's like if you've ever tried to get people to market for you, if you say, hey, would you share this and promote it? They don't do anything. But if you say, hey, I wrote a LinkedIn post for you. Here you go. You can edit it how you want to. And would you mind sharing it? They're like, oh, great. It's a starting point. I think that was a really important thing. We didn't always do that well, but where we did, we were able to get things moving faster. It took us a little bit to realize that. Some of the sponsors, like, they haven't given us their session info, because we just ask them, give us session info, instead of, here, we wrote it for you. Now tell us how you want it to be changed.
Ooh, I like that. I found that, like, myself as a speaker, when I usually go back to the conference and I say, like, what topics do you want me to cover? You know, like, I can give you, yeah, my 5 slated talks I've done a million times, but tell me what people are really needing and I'll like bend into that. And a lot of times I'm like, just write the description. It's going to get everyone excited and I'll literally handle the rest, you know? And I think that's why, like, you guys have seen so much success in this. Nicole, you look like you might have had something that they're going to chime into on that.
Oh, I mean, there's so much I could chime into on that. I mean, Isaac, when you were talking about the Airtable, you know, that was just, I think, you know, I didn't have dreams about it, I'll admit, but I spent a lot of time in that Airtable and it was just a really great tool. I think, Jared, kind of to your point, you know, you had all of this in your head for a long time. And once we were able to like get it into this like master place, you know, and all these slots, everything could be moved around. I feel like that was just such a great tool. And I think that once we got there, everything flowed a lot more easily. But I guess to your point, Isaac, like, you know, it is hard to just ask someone, hey, market this thing for me. Like, I'm really excited about it. You know, we need to kind of offer them something. And so seeing, you know, the whole team put together these documents and these questions that would lead them into thinking about their content, you know, again, I think that was just a really helpful tool. So, you know, it can go both ways, saying, hey, you have a slot here's your time. Like, what are you going to talk about? And if someone has, you know, something just burning on their mind, then of course they're going to fill that really well. But I think more often than not, people are, you know, like to your point, Will, like they're looking for some guidance on, well, what do you want on this day? What do these other folks want to talk about? So I think a little guidance can be really helpful.
Totally. And the stuff that worked really well is like, you know, help first, ask later. So Isaac, when you said, hey, here's a LinkedIn post that you can, you know, post, he's not saying we sent them a generic LinkedIn post. We wrote people promotional posts from our perception of their point of view. Like using their tone of voice. Like we looked at stuff that they'd published in the past and not AI, but like human assisted, like, hey, here's how Jill would post about this. Here's how Jay would promote this. Here's how Morgan would do it this way. Like we were going so far above and beyond to be helpful to our partners that I think the reciprocity, you know, kicked in, you know, twofold, threefold on the backside of that. Right. Not only were they willing to share, then they were engaged in the comments, which, you know, got more reach. And then they felt like they were a part of it because they had not only this cool event, but something that meant something, right? Like this was the moment that partner ecosystems go mainstream. And here's why I think so, based on my background, right? And I had kind of had, because I'd interviewed as many people in the partnership space as anyone, I knew who these influencers were. And we could kind of like target and partner with them as speakers and as promoters and as influencers for this event and make it as easy for them as possible to go make the entirety of the event famous. And that's where like the Airtable started to like kind of like wrapping back to that, because this was actually Isaac's idea and why we had to even use an Airtable. Like administrating a 5-day virtual event with like well over 100 speakers with a person, you know, a six person team, including, you know, Nicole helping us. Wild, stupid. What a terrible idea. It's a stupid idea. Stupid idea. But what got even crazier is that Isaac at some point was like, you know, what'd be really cool is that if every single person got a workbook. And then he's like, it's fine. Just put it all in a Word doc and then we'll just format it. But then we kept on changing things in terms of like speakers and who was going to be where. And I was like, how the heck are we going to keep a spreadsheet, right, organized on like speaker comms and like where's what, like what's locked in, what's workbook ready, what's website ready, like what's been, like what's the status on everything? And then what's going in the workbook? And then especially our partners and our sponsors, right, like their copy, their offers, making them look really great in that workbook. So like I had to hack this Airtable, and I'm 99.99% sure this is the first time this has ever happened, where we had an event schedule that was our project management system, which was the Airtable, had sessions, titles, descriptions, speakers. It had, I mean, literally images. So like, what are the images for every speaker? What are the QR codes and the links that go to them inside of the actual like workbook? And what happened is I got this Airtable and this janky little app that to export this Airtable to a PDF file. So that way our event schedule, we could like push that right up to the shipping deadline and not have to be worried about updating this Microsoft Word doc, this project management system, and this Airtable, because there's no way we would have been able to pull this off if we were trying to do all those things. It would have been a blank workbook with nothing in it. With just like some sponsor logos.
And then next year, it's like,
we really want to level it up and have it be like, you know, five workbooks and like almost like a spiral bound, like really, really turn the event into, I don't want to say coursework, but almost where you could like follow along and like continue your learning. So that was really cool learning that was very painful. I hated that more than anything I've ever hated in my life, I feel like. But that was actually pretty cool. That's pretty cool that was like our project management system. Everything's in there and it spits out a PDF. No one's ever done that before. But like, hey, that's what creation and entrepreneurship is. If it was easy, everyone would have already done it. Like so that's what we call PLX too, by the way, a remote experience, right? Like that's a term that Isaac and I coined. It's like PLX is a remote experience, not a hybrid conference. Hybrid's a lie. You're either there or you're not. It's not hybrid for you. You can't be virtual and in person, right? But a remote experience is both. There is an experience here that's anchoring you so you can actually take notes and like learn, but then you are online. So like we actually called it, it's like, hey, this is the first ever remote experience from like a virtual events perspective. And I don't know. I mean, that's a play on words. It's kind of cute. But at the same time, that's the kind of stuff that made people go like, holy cow, what is this? The brand, the experience, and then wait, I'm getting a workbook shipped to me? And then guess what those people did with the workbook? Because we sent it to them
for free. That's it. This is what I was going to say. This is right. Why I loved it. Because we're like, okay, a physical event, what is it that makes it? Everyone says, hey, I'm going to be at the event. Who else is going to be there leading up to the event? And then it gives people FOMO and they want to be there and it creates this feeling like it's really special. And then when you're there, what does everybody do during the event? They post pictures. Hey, I ran into so-and-so. Here we are, selfie. Hey, this. So it's all this free promotion, all this free marketing right in the heart of the audience you want to reach. With a virtual event, nobody's like, hey guys, I'm so excited. Let me share the link to this landing page I just registered for, right? Like no one's like, hey, who's going to be on this virtual event with me? Yay. No, there's no selfies to share. By mailing everybody a physical workbook, guess what they did? We didn't tell anybody to do this. Everywhere all over LinkedIn was people posting pictures of my PLX workbook just came. Picture of them holding up their workbook. And everybody's like, ooh, I want one of those. Well, I got to register if I want one of those, right? It like created the FOMO of a physical experience, a physical event. You could have a picture of your PLX workbook sitting next to your workout bike. You could have it, you know, out on your, I mean, people would put them all over the place, take pictures of them. So something about that physical component that came before the event leading up to it, it gave us that marketing buzz that you usually only get from an in-person event.
That's so killer. I love that. Everyone should take that away as an idea right now and like just absolutely brilliant. Okay. And so
I'm selling that app that I built for Airtable to a workbook. So you can hit me up on LinkedIn and I'm not giving it to you for free. I'll sell it to you.
So speaking of the workbook really quick, do have definitely a question about knowing more about this workbook and kind of what it looked like. I think people are always looking for like things that people can take away and right, like especially if you can create something that they can then digest their learnings and everything like that and can reflect back on. It seems like such a great idea. Can you guys share a little bit about like what's inside this workbook? Like, is it just, you know, blank spots to take notes? Is it have, you know, like a quizzes in it? Like, what does this workbook exactly look like?
Yeah, I'll take this because I want to, as an artifact that helped make the experience special and helped with a lot of that like viral grassroots marketing, it was very successful. As a valuable piece of content that people will return to and gain a lot of knowledge from, my guess is it was like only moderately. We didn't hit what we wanted to with that. And we want to improve upon that. We're not giving up on it. We think there's really something there. But here's what it was essentially. It's like basically like a paperback book style with a PLX branding. And then you open it up and there's like, what do I want to get out of this conference? A couple of blank sheets and a little bit like about the conference, about the sponsors. And then each page, it was just that day, you know, like product day. And then it was every session would have session title, speakers, name, picture, a little QR code to go to their LinkedIn page, name, title, picture. And then there would be like top three takeaways from this session. Boom, boom, boom. And then there'll be a space to take notes. And then at the bottom, it would say this session was brought to you by whoever the sponsor was of that session. And it would have a little CTA. If you want to go get a free whatever from them, here's a QR code. And it would have their logo. And then it would have like whichever day of PLX it was, that logo on it. And that was basically it. I don't know. I saw some people posting pictures of them full of notes and some people saying they took notes in them. But I didn't hear as much feedback about that. I don't think they had enough space for notes, the pages. We wanted to have it be more interactive, have more of a direct tie-in to the sessions themselves, where there's like specific prompts where people in the session could be like, all right, here, go in your workbook and put down, what are these three things for your company? Here's what they are for mine. What are they for yours? And then you can go ahead and take this to your sales team or whatever and involve them more. We just didn't have enough time to prep those sessions with speakers enough to make that happen. It was more like, please, please just give us three bullet points that you're going to cover. And we'll just like throw it in the workbook and then put like a little blank space and say, everybody take notes. So it wasn't executed very well from that standpoint, but the vision, like we kind of captured a little bit of it and we have something to work with for the future.
That's amazing. Yeah. Like I was just gonna real just, quick. I just wanted to say, like, I think that's really awesome. It's so hard to get speakers to even submit a deck in front of time. So like, give us your three bullet points, like synopsis on this. Like, it's awesome. But like, I have a feeling that sounds like the speaker connection is so deep within your guys' event that like you guys will be able to do that. So sorry, Jared.
No. The only other comment I was gonna throw out is like, after Isaac just said that, I'm actually like 99% sure too that we probably hold the world record for most QR codes ever printed in a book.
I love it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, there were 6 QR codes, 7, 8, 9 QR codes on every single page in this 150 page little pamphlet. And it's like, what was funny is people like, oh, they actually work. So that, I thought that was hilarious that people were like, oh, these QR codes actually work. And it's like, you know how much of a pain in the butt that is to go create, you know, 200 unique QR codes and like move them throughout. So I don't know that I would recommend that, but that was like another funny takeaway that people actually commented, oh, these work. And I'm like, well, some people use QR codes.
That was like a philosophical commitment more than everyone's going to use. It was like, we wanted to take the digital, tie it to the physical, and then tie it back to the digital. There was this like, it's something about that made me feel really good, even if not that many people scanned the QR codes. So sorry, Alex, you had to generate all those QR codes just for me to feel good.
I think it's brilliant too. You got me thinking a little bit about like, how do you activate sponsorships better at events? And so, you know, you guys are the pros, and Nicole, you've been doing events for so long, so you've seen the best and the worst as well. Like, how can people use partnerships better at events? So a lot of people are like, oh, sponsorship, we'll throw your logo up and, you know, maybe you get a couple extra speaking slots and, you know, this sort of thing. But like, I feel like it's really hard to do sponsorships properly where it adds value to the attendees and the partners at the same time. So what are your guys' tips to making partnerships and sponsorships at events not suck? So Nicole, I'll start with you since you haven't got a chance to talk in a bit.
Well, let's see. I mean, I think it's pretty easy for partnerships to not suck if you just, talk to the partner who you're partnering with and see what they want to say, right? I mean, because people do really want to hear from, you know, someone who's an expert at what they do, you know? And so I think that, you know, just kind of like for this event, PLX, you know, you guys created this incredible, you know, we created a vibe. There was this awesome platform with its, you know, physical component, but it was just sort of like the stage, setting a stage for people with their expertise to come out and share everything they know. So, I mean, to be more specific, you know, yes, at some point you're giving someone a slot and taking their logo and spreading it far and wide. But I think that if you approach it with that collaborative mindset and you go into it really curious, you know, with that curiosity of like, well, what are you the expert on? I mean, I think that we can all, you know, get stuck in feeling like we know a lot about our field, but it's amazing how much we don't know if we just tap other people. So I guess just really getting curious about other people's like true expertise and like what they really know that we can just learn so much from and share with the attendees of the events. And I think that's kind of a key way to maximize partnerships. But I'm going to pass that one to the experts on that.
it's not an easy thing to do. I think my point of view on this is that you really have to help. And what do I mean by that? Is that as the event owner, you should have a better understanding of your audience than any of your partners and what works for them, what resonates with them, what makes them happy, what do they love, than your partners do. So you almost have to act truly like an agency from a creative perspective, in my opinion, and think about it from their perspective. How do I help them create stuff or guide them that's really going to knock the attendees' socks off? But then also, how do we create opportunities for them to meet their business objectives? Because at the end of the day, they're not just looking to build brand awareness. They're looking to drive conversations. And that means like, hey, I learned something. How do I get that next thing? Who's someone else that I can talk to, right? You want to take these connections post the event. And that's a really hard thing to do. So I think the degree to which we acted like an agency and helped people achieve that vision, that's where we did good. In any place where we did bad, we didn't do enough of that. It was because it is hard. That's like the hard thing. It's like, what do partners want? They want you to do freaking hard work. They want you to drive value for them. And that's like, it's only going to happen through hard work. You got to go do the stuff that other event people don't want to do. That'd be my take on it, is like, where we screwed up is like, oh, here's a virtual table for you. Like, no one wants to go sit down at a virtual table with three account executives. Like, you just to get pitched someone's software? Like, that's not helping our partners, you know? Like, that's a terrible idea. And we did it anyways, and it was stupid. Why? Because it's like, oh, it's a feature in the platform, so we should use it. And it's like, no, what we should have done, like, Isaac was like, look, here's exactly what we should have done. Isaac, I'll kick it over to you. Like, what should have we done? Is it for an example
on integrating partners into the conference and, like, generating conversations?
Yeah, so, you know, we kind of learned this. We experimented a little bit with this one feature just for the heck of it. And later we're like, oh, that's what we should have done. So instead of the virtual tables where you go to a virtual booth and, like Jared said, have an AE say, hey, you should buy our product, right? Like, there's this, AirMe, the platform we used, has a one-on-one speed networking feature where you can, like, hey, join one-on-one speed networking. And it just scrolls through and says, you've been matched to this person. Yes or no? Do you want to skip to the next one or match with them? You match with them and there's a timer. It's like 2 minutes or 3 minutes. It'll count down and then you get matched to the next person. Turns out it's like incredibly fun, incredibly valuable. People love it. And what I would have done instead of saying have a virtual table sponsor, say after your session, your session's going to end and we're going to say, okay, 10 minutes of virtual speed networking. And then your AEs can be hanging out there with everybody else and they'll get matched to people and you'll just have conversations just like you would bumping into the hallway, right? Or you can ahead of time ask people questions when they register for the event. You know, what industry are you in? What are you interested in? A couple things. And then be able to say to those sponsors, hey, heads up, here are 10 people that filled out this that we think would be good for you to personally reach out to and say, hey, I saw you're going to be at this virtual event. Would love to connect with you, right? Like get them some, because it's just different. You don't have the serendipity of an in-person event and trying to fake it, I think doesn't really work. So those are a couple things. And then one final thing that we took away from this for working with partners, if you can prove value to those partners, obviously they're going to be way happier. That can be very challenging with, like, you know, okay, at a physical event, they can come away and say they booked so many meetings or they had so many conversations. At a virtual event, a lot of them are like, eh. And they're tracking, if you're like, oh, how many people clicked on that QR code, let's say, or how many people, you know, after your session, when you said, go to this landing page, how many people went? That's actually a really crappy way to measure the influence of that event. What we found, one of our partners brought this to us voluntarily. And we were like, oh my gosh, we should ask all of our partners that. They said, hey, we analyzed our gong calls, our recordings for the next several weeks after our event to see how many people mentioned that event on calls with sales reps or demos and whatever. And it was like a huge number. And if you looked at the links that people clicked with the event, it wasn't that impressive. It was like, yeah, okay, there's some people that it drove some, you know, pipeline according to the attribution software. But if you asked and you heard people, the number of people who brought it up and said, oh my gosh, I found out about you guys from this event. Or yeah, I you know, I've known about you, but I didn't really know what you did until this event. So that's a really interesting way for the virtual, especially, I think, is to say, can you have some kind of attribution that's like, is there a free form where you ask people, how did you hear? Or can you look at those, you know, ask your sales reps, hey, are people mentioning this? Some of those more qualitative ways that have not yet been baked into attribution software to be able to go back to those partners and say, go ask your sales reps. How many of them mentioned this event? You know, you didn't see the clicks, but go ask your sales reps. I think that could be a really cool way to kind of prove that value over time.
I never thought about the idea of like, yeah, setting up for anyone who doesn't know what Gong is, it's like a call recording software, does sentiment analysis and text analysis and all that stuff. Like you can literally just search, you know, partner led, you know, and see how many people actually went to the event. And that's actually brilliant. So I'm going to steal that one as well. So thank you guys for that idea. You guys, there's been so much information, but I don't know how we're going to wrap up in time if I keep going through all the millions of questions that are coming in that I have on my mind. So let's start to wrap up because I think you guys are going to have some cool stuff to share with everybody. So let's start off with my second last favorite question in the entire world, which is, what's your number one tip that you have for somebody who's planning an event this year? Like, what sort of tip would you have for them? It could be about something we've talked about right now, or it could be something completely new that you want to share. So, all right, Isaac, lay it on
us. I'll
jump
in. Look, if when you think of the idea for the event, if your immediate first reaction isn't, oh my gosh, this is going to be awesome, personally, if you're not personally super hyped about it, forget about it. What's the point? If it sounds boring to you, why is it going to be exciting to anyone else? So like, that would be the thing when I said, I didn't really feel like doing an event, like being an events company, I meant that. But when Jared came to me and said, check out this PLX partner led everything. Every day is a different department where the X is the variable that changes. Every day has a different color. It's synthwave themed. We're going to come up with our own. So he pitched this vision that I was like, yes, I can't wait to launch. Nobody's seen anything like this. We're going to blow them away. The fact that I was that excited about it, I think is the only thing that got me through some of the stuff we had to go through to make this thing. So that'd be my number one tip. Don't run events that you're not hyped about to attend.
I love that. I love it. Jared, you're up.
I think Isaac hit the nail on the head. A comment I made earlier is that event should not be about you. It should be about something bigger than yourself and your partners and your ecosystem. So like, what is that message that needs to be imprinted on the world that isn't something that's written on some corporate wall of like, you know, like growth and innovation? It's like the Innovate Conference. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, what do you believe about this future world with innovation that is truly your opinion? So I think most events lack a voice. And for when you lack a voice, you lack a brand, you lack a reason to tar, a clarion call. Like for me, I truly meant that I wanted this to be the moment that partner ecosystems went mainstream. Like it's calling your shot. Like have some guts to like go do something. An event is that. If it's not an event, then that can just be content, right? You want to talk about innovation? Great. Go do your innovation content. But like, why is there an event? An event should be a moment that marks. This was the largest conference in B2B partnerships history, right? Event fully focused on that by far. There hasn't been even anything remotely close. And I wanted it to be that. And I think you should have a voice and a strong opinion. And if you don't have a voice or a strong opinion, which you know I think is dovetails nicely to Isaac's point, it's if you're not passionate about it, then just go do content. Don't do an event. An event needs to mean something. It's a moment in time. It's special. Events are special. They're experiences. Treat them that way.
Mic drop.
I love what you said, Jared. That's great. I will go, let's see, you know, the event, the longtime event planner in me will have to say what I kind of said earlier about, you know, what would be, you know, a number one advice for someone planning an event this year would be, you know, start early if you can. not always possible, but start early and get as much out of your mind and out there with your team or whoever you're working with as early as you can, and front load the work, because more work will definitely come up and you might change your mind and then double your own work because, you know, some new creative idea came up. But start early, I guess, you know, front load the work and just trust your team and ask for help too, you know, like whether it's from partners who are, you know, co-creating content or just, you know, someone else who's done it, you know, something similar. Like there's a lot of people who are willing to share what they've done. So
bring in Nicole to help you. We couldn't have done it without her, and I'm not joking.
Oh gosh, you guys.
Really agree with that advice of start early. Yeah, it's Isaac and I right now, like we're just meeting today in person. That's like we're in the same podcast studio right now because it's like we need to work on PLX for next year. And Isaac's already like, we're behind. And I'm like, what are you talking about? This wasn't even an idea for another 6 months. Like we're good. So I agree with that advice.
I was going to say, you go from doing it in 90 days to now like, hey, we have way more time to figure this all out. Okay, so last question I have for you guys. You know, we talked about Gong, Airtable, so much nerdy, like cool tech tips and things like that. What are your guys' favorite resources? You know, it could be books, blogs, gadgets, apps, you know, pretty much what sort of stuff is your favorite things in the entire world that you guys have?
Yeah, I'll give two. Go ahead, Nicole. Go ahead. You go first.
All right. Well, I have my two. Well, my number one is Slack. I mean, if you're not on Slack for your office, your remote office or otherwise, it's a game changer. So huge pitch for Slack there. But the second one I would say is, you know, we spoke to it earlier, is Airtable. I mean, Jared was saying, you know, we used it in a way maybe it had never been used before. So, I mean, Airtable can be an incredible resource for staying organized and doing a lot of even like content management and housing a lot of different, you know, QR codes, hundreds of them, if you have them. And then sounds like this app that Jared created that can take the content and put it into a PDF. So I guess Slack and Airtable would be my two nerdy resources that I live by.
I love it.
Well, I mean, endless events is, you know, I don't know if you can call it a tool, but absolutely.
I hear that Will guy's a real tool. So
he's the favorite tool. No, I'm going to say two things. One is AirMeet, which we use, the platform we use for this. Big fan. Shout out to AirMeet. Really, really liked it. It helped us create that experience.
Use the code Partner Hacker at checkout.
Oh yeah, yeah. Do we have a code? I don't even think we have a code. But you just
we don't
just
have
tell
a code.
Them.
I'm just messing.
Tell them you heard about it. So AirMeet was awesome. And by the way, any tools you're using in planning an event, like see if you can turn them into partners. You know, like we didn't try to do this with Airtable. We should have though. Hey, we should say this is powered by Airtable because it is, right? This workbook. But so AirMeet's one, and then the other is just people. So I know that sounds weird, but like. The first thing we did when we decided to run this event was Jared's like, okay, we're going to go talk to some of the people at Drift who created the Drift, you know, Rev Growth Conference. He's like, we're going to go talk to, you know, people from Sastr who have done Sastr before. We just went and found people who had done this and just were like, help, we need advice. How did you do your event? So like just having those people to go to from time to time, to me, because they're going to give you some of that nitty gritty stuff. So like that was huge from the get go.
I love that. I'm going to extend the answer, Isaac, past people that we sought help with before the event to like what's my favorite thing right now? It's working with people who are great at what they do. Now, what do I mean by that is the quality of speakers that we had at this conference were far above and beyond the caliber of people that had been previously talking about partnerships, right? So like, I'll give you an example, like Brent Adamson, he was the author of The Challenger Sale, perhaps the best selling sales book in the past decade, certainly in the B2B, in the SaaS industry, certainly. you know, like having him speak with Tiffany Bova, who's like Gartner's number one analyst of all time. Like they were fighting way above our weight class. So like my favorite thing and like trend is to like work with the influencers, right? Go work with those people that are in the market that are already past where you're at and make those people famous. And by virtue of that, you're going to make your brand better. You're going to make yourself stand out more. So I think, you know, influencing the influencers is my favorite thing right now. And that has nothing to do with tech. You just have to help them. You got to make them look good and make them feel great. And we've never paid a single person to speak at our events in direct monetization, but we had to do a lot of work to make them look so good and feel so at home with us that they would come in and, you know, drop those types of things and like call in favors and do some crazy stuff to get, you know, like Andrew Chen, you know, had a $4 billion funded Andreessen Horowitz talking on Startup Day about partnerships and startups. And, you know, he has a best-selling book. Like this, the guy's the real deal. He's like one of the, he deployed more capital that previous year than I think almost any venture capitalist in the world, at least in the tech industry. How the heck did we get him to keynote day one? Right. It's like you put in a lot of work and you elevate that up. So influence the influencers. So I'm not going to say tech. I'm going to say that.
I like it. Far too often I lean towards like the tech side, so I like the general tip about that as well. So, hell yeah. Wow, guys. Audience, go nuts in the chat. Put your emojis in there. We want to hear from you. But you guys, this has been like an absolutely incredible episode. Jam-packed with tactical tips, strategic tips, ideas around how to use Airtable and QR codes better. There's been so much good stuff. But you guys, huge applause to each of you, Nicole, Isaac, Jared, thank you.
Thanks for having us, man. You guys are embodying one of our core principles, which is make people famous. Here we are. We're endless customers. And you're like, we want to make our customers famous. Come talk to us about
totally.
Your event. So, I love it.
Believe it or not, like it's really hard sometimes to get our customers on because they're like, oh, my event's not. I'm like, no, like this event's really cool. You guys should talk more about it. You know, so I'm so happy to have you guys here.
What are the best methods of like counseling or therapy for people after events when they have PTSD? That's a one I'd like to tune into as well.
I got lots for that. Yeah, we got you.
Hit you up in LinkedIn, Isaac.
Oh wait, there's this joke that Brant and I say on the podcast all the time is that like for a lot of people who are hiring event companies, they go like, yeah, like why do these overtime rules exist? And we're like, because we're doing this every single day of our entire life, and so like we got you. We'll teach you all the tips.
Love it.
You guys, been so awesome to have each of you on the show. And thank you to our audience for checking out this episode. We hopefully got a ton of information. There's so much I could talk about when it comes to this episode, but I'm just going to play out the intro. Let's make some noise. Let's have a good time. And this has been probably one of the best episodes of Event Icons ever. So let's rock that intro and get out of here. Thanks again, guys.
See you guys.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Hashtag Event Icons. To catch all of the bonus content, resources mentioned, and an invite to our Facebook and LinkedIn groups, head to www.event-icons.com. Also, let us know what you thought about this week's episode, share your biggest takeaway, and just tag your social media posts with Hashtag Event Icons. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again soon, right here on Hashtag Event Icons.